Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air until 10 on this, the 8th of May. It's a Thursday now, VE Day for people around the continent, and also likely to be a new Pope Day, possibly maybe. We're looking out for the holy smoke. Hope springs eternal, as you say. We're at your service today in the same manner as ever. You can tell us a story on WhatsApp. That's 087 032 32 32. And you can also write to us an email. That's oliver at rte.ie. Now, this morning, we're going to meet the Irish director behind the new Nicolas Cage film. It's called The Surfer. Lorcan Finnegan is the director, and the writer is Irish as well. And it's set at a secluded beach in Western Australia in the bacon heat. And Cage just wants to surf in the place that he grew up and left. But the bad boys of the area operate a kind of violent locals-only policy. And so Nicolas Cage basically goes mad under the sun, like a Samuel Beckett play stuck in a heat wave. With not even the money to buy a coffee, and then the food runs out. And is his car going to be taken? And how bad is it going to get for him? He's not going to eat that, is he? Or drink there? Ah! It's kind of laugh out loud outrageous. But there is a message out there as well for the lost bros in the world and the consumerism of our society as well. The Surfer, which I really enjoyed, is coming out in cinemas this weekend. I wonder what it's like to work with Nicolas Cage. Well, we'll find out everything from Lorcan later on this morning. 51551. The big story in Ireland, as you're hearing in the news, is the Scorts issue in Camogie. How quickly that unfurled in less than a week. The front page of the Irish Sun, you can stick your Scorts, and it is just talking about the heat of the controversy, saying that Camogie players planning another protest this weekend, like they did last weekend. Cork and Waterford both refusing to don mandatory Scorts for Saturday's Munster final as the rebellion heats up. And they were going to do this even if the match gets abandoned. And we don't know what's going to happen with that protest yet, because as you're hearing in the news, you go back to that simple protest, Dublin Kilkenny Camogie players last weekend, and the extraordinary response it's had around the country and outside of it, and the pressure on the Camogie Association, whose rules mandate that they must wear this portmanteau of shorts and skirts. And they find it uncomfortable. 83% of the players have said that. There was a vote to retain the compulsory nature of the Scorts. And we forecast here, only because it was so blindingly obvious, that there would be a managed climb down by the association, and that there would be a climb down on the climb down. So you've heard there's going to be a special Congress with the Camogie Association in 2 weeks' time. That date was going to be next year, basically, 2026. So the association statement says it had proposed a deal with this issue at next year's Congress, but having listened to player feedback, we now recognise that waiting until 2026 is not acceptable for many. Although similar motions did not pass at the 2024 Congress, the association is committed to representing the voices of players who wish to have a choice in their playing attire. If the motion passes, the new rule allowing the option to wear skorts or shorts would take effect from the 24th of May 2025. Now, yesterday, in the initial climb down, that date was going to be 2027. So that is very significant indeed. And we'll be following that. Climb up on the lights. It's been hugely embarrassing for all concerned. Miriam Lord has skorts in her mind. I notice as she's writing about Dáil activities in this morning's Irish Times. She said it was unusual to see a couple of TDs in the chamber wearing shorts. In past times, the annual arrival of former Fine Gael TD Bernard Durkin in his Man from Del Monte jacket signalled the official start of the Dáil summer. It seems the new intake have a different way of doing things. Oh wait, it's more than two. Here's another pair of shorts. And another, and another. It looks like a coordinated sporting fashion statement, which it was, she says. And she points out, in fact, half a dozen Sinn Féin TDs wore shorts in the chamber when the Dáil resumed after the May bank holiday. And more of them besides in the Shannon. All of them women, which was disappointing, she says. If a few Sinn Féin men couldn't tog out in shorts to support the Camogie playing women of Ireland, surely they could have managed a few solidarity skorts. And then she talks about the junior minister, Charlie McConlogue, representing the government on behalf of the issue. And she says basically that Charlie missed the opportunity to land, to take a stand on the skorts issue with what is kind of indistinct speechifying. He didn't take a view at all. She said he needed a skorts Earths policy. We actually had a lot of texts yesterday suggesting that the men playing hurling and football this weekend might show up in skorts to show support for the women hurlers, but I don't see that been taken up somehow. Good Irish news. Met Aaron forecasting glorious sunshine to continue through the weekend. It is very much scorts weather. Glorious day of sunshine today. It's going to stay fair for the weekend. It'll be pleasant and warm, especially in the south and west. You're the luckiest now over there. Highest temperatures 19 degrees in Cork and Clare, but it's much cooler for everyone on the east coast. Stiff easterly breeze, keeping temperatures as low as just 12 degrees. It is just chilly, chilly in the shade. But Saturday will be warm everywhere, though there is a chance of showers in Donegal and Clare. You won't mind that because you get 15 to 19 degrees when it's not showery. Long-term forecast, a return to dry and pleasant weather next week. So on and on it goes. Is there a drought on the way? The messages are coming in already. Hallelujah! Shortcut to change. And we'll have a shorts and shades party on Saturday in Croker. Sanity prevails. We won't wait till the policy change, says this texter. Well, that is the question, whether the protest, I would kind of guess no, that the protest won't go ahead at the weekend because of the Congress. I don't know. We'll have to watch and see. Cork and Waterford in a Munster final are prepared to see the match abandoned, which the referee would be forced to do under the rules. We'll see what happens. I love that such an inconsequential subject is distracting from the awfulness of what's going on in the world, and it's great publicity for Camogie. This is a very cynical texter. Let's try and fix every little problem one bit at a time. Yes, there are two wars and possibly a third on the way, but let's focus on the things we can control. Okay, please help us. Going to America now. The Americans are announcing a big, big announcement at 3 p.m, but the news is already out. A US-UK trade deal. What? It's a massive undertaking. This would normally take years upon years of talks and wrangling, but it is now done, according to Trump. Did he use AI to speed it all up? Have the Brits agreed to some sort of food deal for the chlorinated chicken and everything else, which would basically end his arrangement with the EU, because they'd have to be redone if suddenly Britain had lots of chlorinated chicken. Is any of this true? It is likely to be just the headline points of a trade deal, which is normally the starting point, not the end. But the Trump administration will spin it as a done deal. It is, however, a win for Keir Starmer, who will be going to the White House either today or in the coming days into the weekend, and a win for Donald Trump as well, because the Brexit vote 2016, they didn't even start the talks under any of the administrations since then, all the way through Biden. They didn't even begin the trade talks. So it is a win for sure. In other American news, the Americans are pushing nations facing tariffs to approve deals with Elon Musk's Starlink. This is an exclusive in the Washington Post, saying some countries have turned to the private satellite internet firm to ease the trade talks, according to details leaked from US State Department staffers. Extraordinary story. Lesotho in Africa has done a deal in the hopes it will, with Starlink, in the hopes it will ease negotiations to remove their 10% tariffs, which apply across the world in a 90-day window. And in India, government officials have sped through approvals of Starlink for broadband. It's satellites for broadband. It can bring it to remote places and so on. It is a brilliant company, to be fair, but there are extraordinary conflicts of interest. So they've sped through approvals of Starlink in India with the understanding that doing so could help them cement trade deals with the administration. The Washington Post reporting that Starlink's international expansion could unlock multi-billion dollar revenue streams. And there's an expert saying that's 1% of India's consumer broadband market would generate $1 billion every year, all to the private benefit of Elon Musk, who famously donated, what was it, $270 million to Trump's campaign, and he is set to exit his Doge agency at the end of the month to focus on the crashing fortunes of Tesla. But we'll watch what happens there. It's an amazing story. That'll go everywhere as well today. Another figure in Trump's life, which is the focus of the most read article in the New York Times this morning online. Where is Melania? So listen, read it this now. The lights never seem to be on and the shutters stay shut. As the weeks pass by at the White House, the corner of the residence long used by the First Ladies remains dark. Because the First Lady, is she a vampire? No, the First Lady does not really live in Washington. Melania Trump vanishes from view for weeks at a time, says this New York Times piece, holing up in Trump's tower in Manhattan or in Florida where she can lie low at Mar-a-Lago. It's like having Greta Garbo's First Lady, saying. Mrs. Trump is expected to appear in the capital today. That's why now they're thinking about her. She's going to unveil a postage stamp honouring Barbara Bush, the former First Lady, and attend a ceremony for military mothers. Actually, side note to that is George W. Bush, the most prominent of the Bush siblings, is not going to attend, such as his very shaky relationship with Donald Trump. But two people with knowledge of Ms. Trump's schedule said she spent fewer than 14 days at the White House in total since her husband arrived back there 108 days ago. Others say even 14 visits or 14 days at the White House is a generous estimate. That the First Lady's whereabouts is among the most sensitive of subjects in the White House only adds to the intrigue, because they fight back against everything, but they're not saying much about it. Every marriage has its highs and lows, but with so many other things, the Trumps are in a league of their own. In the span of a couple of months, they've endured a public trial about his philandering, two assassination attempts, and a presidential campaign. And of course, Melania Trump kept well away from the courthouse in Lower Manhattan and from the campaign trail until the assassination attempt. But she did show up. She did an engagement on the 1st of April, a speech there. Then she came back a few weeks later and did the Easter egg roll at the White House with Donald Trump. And she went to Pope Francis' funeral with Donald Trump as well recently. When they landed back in Newark on a Saturday afternoon, it was Melania Trump's 55th birthday. The president gave her a peck on the cheek. She got into a car. He climbed into Marine One, that's the helicopter, and they went their separate ways. New York Times, which is a media outlet hostile to Donald Trump, we must point out, for fairness and all of that, for sure, don't we? Yeah, we can. What else are we saying on the text? Reese Gortz. Good morning. I thought I was listening to an episode of The Handmaid's Tale, says Mary. I believe there is white smoke on the Scorts issue. Yeah, we're all experts on conclave. Can a possible Scort burning be organised on the Hill of Tara? Scort burning is not an easy thing to say, that is for sure, on the radio. But we'll see what happens. Sure, why not? Mary McAleese is actually in the front page of the Irish Times this morning, speaking of a feminist protester. And they're sort of hinting that she's half endorsing Michael McDougall. Former Minister for Justice, Attorney General Michael McDougall is a man with a fearsome devotion to Ireland, former president of Mary McAleese has said. Her words will attract attention given speculation that McDougall may consider putting his hat into the ring to succeed President Higgins in the election this year. The government are looking forward to that election. I would have thought they'd be up and running in May, but it's probably more like June, because there will be no one paying any attention to ministers once that absolute bloodbath begins. Now, some words you might need to know as we head into these conclave hours, with a vote due in 15 minutes' time in the Sistine Chapel. An expert in the papacy in Italy is known as a Vaticanista, basically. And that's kind of journalists and academics, and they build up all their ties. So we'll be hearing from them as well. The Italian word that describes a cardinal favourite to become the Pope, a papabile. So if you're on the unofficial shortlist, head of the conclave, you're one of the papabiles, which is very good. The top contender, of course, alongside the Italian Pietro Parolin, is the English-speaking Filipino man. Very hard to dislike this man. He's dubbed the Asian Francis, presumably by his rivals, to make him seem more liberal than maybe he is. Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle. He's an all-singing, all-dancing cardinal. Very smiley man. Fluent in English, of course. He'd be great. Just give it to him already. The church is a conglomerate, after all. It's all about growth. And an Asian pope would certainly achieve that. But in the Catholic corners of the internet, the song Imagine by John Lennon is going wildly viral. Oddly, it's more or less an atheist anthem, isn't it? But it's sung by Cardinal Tagle, or as we're calling him this morning, Cardinal Karaoke. Is he any good? Well, sure, we'll figure it out. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. Got some help on the high note there. Come on, Cardinal Karaoke, get to that big note. I hope someday you join us, and the world will live as one. It's a no from me, Louis.
I don't know, he nearly did it. He nearly nailed it. It's okay for a cardinal.
He nearly got there. Oh, that's very good. for a cardinal. It's very good. He's 67 years of age, which apparently might count slightly against him. I don't know why, because apparently Pietro Parolin is 70 and is the perfect age. But anyway, the odds are that the new pope, they get to choose their own name. And they can use their own birth name. Well, nobody has done that since Pope Marcellus in 1555. The odds are the new pope will choose the name Pius or Leo. It would be Pius the 13th. That seems unlikely. Or Leo the 14th. And for every pope, for nearly four centuries, up to 1958, just six papal names were used. Clement, Pius, Benedict, Leo, Innocent and Gregory. And one name definitely ruled out is Peter, out of respect for the first pope, St. Peter the Apostle. And also because of a prophecy, isn't it? Not approved by the Vatican, that Peter II would be the last pope to serve if someone did it. John has been the most popular name for popes, with 21 popes choosing to adopt it. Although, confusingly, the last pope to actually take that name was Pope John the 23rd, because historians accidentally misnumbered the popes after John the 14th. So... don't count your popes before they're hatched. We're watching. We're watching out, by the way. When it's announced, by the way, they're going to say the cardinal's birth name, but in Latin. So it can be a confusing time for the hour after that white smoke when it does finally occur. And there was massive worldwide interest in this story, as you'd imagine, way more than the pope's death and the funeral, especially among social media users. I noticed on Google Trends, actually, overnight, the conclave is the second most searched thing in Ireland after that Arsenal-PSG a match, which of course Arsenal did not win. Drama, fashion and cigarettes. The internet has cast its pop gaze on the Pope's selection. This is a story about how this traditionally solemn and secretive Vatican conclave has been reimagined on social media as a dramatic, meme-worthy spectacle. It's American press. Young internet users and influencers far removed from Catholicism are embracing the pageantry with a mix of fascination, irony and humour. And it mentions travel bloggers from Dublin, graphic designers from New Jersey, weighing in on the papal pick and sharing their takes on Instagram and Twitter. And basically pop culture depictions like the film Conclave and the series starring Jude Law and the young pope have helped shape the modern campy gaze towards it. And a lot of the engagement on it comes from communities that feel alienated by the church, like the LGBTs, but they're now remixing Vatican imagery into this pop cultural content. Observers are questioning whether the interest in the conclave will, you know, turn out to a lasting involvement in the church. Probably not, but it certainly increases the attention and the relevance of the church in the world for the moment. I kind of find it thrilling that youngsters are, you know, so interested in this sheer wondrous history of the spectacle and a medieval ritual that's still happening in 2025 of a very powerful institutional institution responsible for much good and much hurt in the world. Hort squirts on my brain at the moment. So may this conclave craze continue, basically. We'll look into that. People are still texting in on squirts. I thought squirts were only worn in D4 because it's Scort. I actually took the north side view of that guy, and it's like a north side of saying scared. Scort. She's wearing a squirt. It's like squirts. Wear a squirt. Someone else says, while they're at it, can they change ladies football to women's football? Or maybe just football. A note from the Grass Ceiling, that excellent book on women's sport. And that she didn't like the word camogie. She said, just call it hurling. It's women playing hurling. It's the same thing, essentially. It's just women playing it. So there you go. A quick roundup of other things going on around the world. The Disneyland is coming to Abu Dhabi. There's a new Disney resort in the Middle East. So they have one in California, of course, Florida, Japan, France, China and Shanghai. Two in China. This is going to be in the United Arab Emirates, the first new resort in 15 years, the first resort ever in the Middle East. And they're in the process of building this attraction on Yas Island. Is that a kind of a Gen Z name? Yas. Alongside SeaWorld, which already lives there, and Warner Brothers World, which I don't think exists anywhere. And also fans of gaming online. Grand Theft Auto 6 has been the most anticipated game of the moment, and they announced a delay until 2026, the long wait since Grand Theft Auto 2013 was the fifth one, continues, and people are very angry and upset about this sort of thing. And speaking of Simon Cowell, he has launched a blistering attack on billionaires, calling them snobby and obnoxious, saying that he's very happy with the amount of money that he has. It's £500 million is his estimated wealth. He doesn't feel money's the biggest drive for him, happy with what he has, and has also been saying that he hung out with billionaires for a while and said, I didn't like them. I hated them. They were obnoxious. They were snobby. I think a lot of people thought they were better than other people because they had money, which is ridiculous when you think about it. Yes, we think about it all the time, Simon. Yes, it is ridiculous. And all those people shouldn't have all the money concentrated in one place. 51551 is the text. You can always get in touch on the WhatsApp. 087-032-32-32. We talked about the favourite for Pope, so let's have the favourite. Fontaine's DC Irish music for you on this Thursday morning. You know what to do.